Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pressure than whole, riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. Yeah, hear me rap, it's like hand G rapping his prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Miami Nice. Yes, the Modern Man Horny Campfire at 11:47 o'clock on a Saturday night or whatever time and whatever time zone you're listening. I am one half of your team here, your undercover squad, Blake Howard, and staring across from me over Zoom, devastatingly, because I would love to be in her presence again, is my amazing co-host, Katie Walsh. Katie, we're just trying to reach through the Zoom and grab each other. Katie, Why are we so close together? Do you want to tell the folks what was happening over the last couple of days?
Why were we so close together, and why do we both sound like we've lost our voices? We are raspy, husky little monkeys today. Mm-hmm. After a long love fest weekend, yes, of yelling in people's faces in dive bars and talking to our heroes and talking to each other and yelling street names in the glorious city of Los Angeles, California.
Not just street names.
Hospitals.
Kaiser Permanente.
Kaiser Permanente. Slauson.
Yes.
Blake Howard was in the City of Angels
for
a very special event. And you guys have all probably seen it on social media.
If you've been on social media, you've had to have seen it. Mm-hmm. And that event was the incredible folk at the American Cinematheque, now in their second year, are doing a thing called the Friends of the Fest Podcast Festival, where they get movie podcasts to select a movie that is related to the show that they do and to come along, usually introduce the film. Sometimes, very luckily, they've got filmmakers or talent that come along with them. And last year, we were so proud and really chuffed by the way that we could do two screenings. We did one for Travis Woods' great show, Increment Vice, where we screened Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice. Folks at that screening saw my disembodied head dressed like Bigfoot with a afro on.
A beautiful wig.
But the fastest selling show of the fest.
At
the Los Feliz 3, which I've now seen and know some of the surroundings. My legendary co-host here, the beautiful Katie Walsh, hosted with my disembodied head.
Yes.
A sold out screening of Miami Vice.
Yes, on DCP last year, DCP. But this year we said, hey, can we do it again, but with Blake in person?
Yes.
And they said, sure, do you want to be in the Egyptian Theater, 100-year-old, beautifully refurbished cinema palace, the Egyptian? And they said, do you want a 35mm print? We said, yes, please.
Yes, please to both. We would like
yes,
both
please.
Of those.
Yes, please.
Yes, please, kindly.
And they gave us that. And then... So we just said, okay, we're going to have a fun weekend. We're going to drink. We're going to meet all our friends. We're going to hang out with the podcast OHM friends and fam and all of those people. And we're going to have a great time. And that's all we thought was going to happen.
True. And then I'll paint you guys a picture at about what would be kind of lunchtime Wednesday, LA time.
Yes.
Which is around 5 a.m. Sydney time. Not an unusual time for me to be awake recording a podcast or to be awake. But this particular time I was awake because I was getting ready to board a flight in a mm-hmm. full gray suit, full Vincent yeah. Collateral style so that I could surprise my lovely co-host dressed as Vincent Collateral, committed to the bit at LAX so we could run into each other. And literally mid putting on my pants, I get a all siren emoji text from one Katie Walsh that says, what are you doing? I need to talk to you right now. And I was yes. like, I firstly, as one does when they're about to travel, was thinking, oh God, is there...
You're like, her house burned down or something.
Is there something wrong with her car? She can't get me from the airport. Is something gone wrong? Is everything okay? Like, she had to go out of town or something. Well, I don't know.
Right.
Just some chaotic yeah. thing. Katie calls me and... It appeared that, it's even crazy to say it, and we even already did it, but the legendary filmmaker himself, Michael Mann, had been in touch with the American Cinematheque, saying that he would love to attend the screening of Miami Vice on 35mm, not director's cut, the actual theatrical cut of Miami Vice, and that he would be really pleased if he could do a Q&A with one, Katie Walsh, and myself, Blake Howard. And so Katie said all of that in a much more panicked, freaked out, excited, over the moon way when it was translated to me. And I literally like dropped my trouser pants and my knees were shaking because I couldn't believe it. So here we are, Thursday morning my time, Wednesday lunchtime Katie's time. We find this out, but you could not talk to two people who were more prepared, more thrilled, and just more over the moon to do it. And the only caveat was our sensational screening at the Egyptian had already sold out. It was also right. one of the fastest selling shows at this year's fest, even though it was a
and
big
it's a bigger
venue,
theater. Yes.
It sold out. And they said, we would like to keep Michael's attendance a secret. And we said, yeah. okay. And so bursting from within our hearts was this wonderful secret. And we were telling our friends who were tossing up whether they could make it, maybe had other plans. All we could tell them and insisted was, you do not want to miss this. And
yes.
They kept asking and raising their eyebrows, what do you mean? We have a surprise. Do not miss it. And so as we attended the screening, we introduced it. Katie was so lovely, gave me a beautiful introduction in person to this crowd. She was on the stage, got lots of cheers. We then collectively got some cheers on the stage, said some thank yous, talked about the podcast for a moment, and then stressed. And even Katie said, the doors are locked. You're not allowed to leave. You have to wait until the end credits roll because we have a surprise for you.
I'm sure the American Cinematheque was thrilled that I threatened the audience. They were trapped inside the theater and couldn't leave. Doors are locked.
I think everyone knew it was fun. But the best thing was then, basically, when Jose Yiro's Florida white Aryan Brotherhood connection kidnaps Trudy. At that moment, we get a tap on the shoulder that our special guest, Michael Mann, had arrived. Katie and I joined him in the green room, met his lovely wife, Summer, and himself, had a wonderful chat to introduce, talked about how it was all going to go down, took our seats then, and Michael sneakily took his own seat and watched the reaction of this, how well this movie played in that theater. And it was absolutely gangbusters. And
it was gangbusters.
It was a dream for us.
Sold out crowd, amazing reaction, people, you know, cheering not only for Fiend for Mojitos, but they were cheering for
My Mommy and Daddy Love Me.
I mean, the people in front of us were like rocking back and forth in their chairs, like losing their minds.
They were loving
this
it.
This one girl was like, she would lean forward and then sort of grab her head. And like, yeah, it was an amazing, amazing crowd. And we had asked how many people had never seen it before. And like, maybe one third to a half of the audience had never seen it before. And so that was pretty astonishing that they all saw it, you know, in this setting. But yeah, so we all sneakily went back in, watched the rest of the movie, and then we made our way to the wings and got to introduce our dear friend Michael.
Yeah.
To the audience.
We're wondering what was the most appropriate way to do that. And Katie and I decided to just do the hand bump gesture of Crockett and Tubbs. And Katie asked, like, what time is it? And I said, it's time to meet the man. And we screamed with glee, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Michael Mann. And the crowd went bananas. And so hopefully... this is not just a podcast of us regaling you with the tale from our perspective. This is Michael Mann on Miami Nice that you are about to hear. An incredible conversation. We had such a thrill doing it. He was in such a fantastic mood. It couldn't have gone better. We were completely thrilled.
It was really lovely. He had an incredible... thoughtful questions or answers to our questions, and said some really beautiful things about the film, shared some really crazy stories about the research that he did and stuff that it was inspired by. We had some fun audience questions, and Michael answered those in his inimitable way. And it was really lovely. His wife was there watching the rest of the second half of the film with him, and his daughters were there. They had watched the entire film. And so it was a really beautiful celebratory family affair, not only for the Mann family, but also for the One Heat Minute Productions family, because we had lots of our friends and loved ones and former podcast guests and former podcast hosts of One Heat Minute Productions in the house. So it was really, really special for everyone. And so we're just so grateful that we got to do it. And we're so happy that we got to surprise everyone with this wonderful surprise. And it's just been a bursting sort of excitement, enthusiasm, and friendship bonanza. So that has been really, really fun for us to experience.
We have not been doom scrolling. We've been joy scrolling.
Joy
scrolling through all the reactions, because again, it kind of went crazy and created some of the most significant FOMO you could imagine. And people were asking Katie and I, like, how do you guys feel? And to be honest, like, we couldn't comprehend it, I don't think, fully in the moment. And as we're recording this, this is a couple of days essentially after, and it's still like so fresh and so crisp and so... you know, it's kind of everything. So we are so glad to present you now with that chat with Michael Mann talking finally Miami Vice, a film that doesn't have a director's commentary, a film that goes some pretty special places, that goes some pretty special places, and particularly a couple of personal highlights is Michael Mann calling me insane in front of the whole crowd, which was absolutely sensational. And then, of course, you guys would expect it. We close on a question about Heat 2, because we couldn't help ourselves. I couldn't help myself, but it was just an amazing event. We're hoping to get maybe some video up. And if I can't get better quality, there will be one video that I'll put up. One of our amazing patrons, Alex, videotaped the entire event on his phone. We've got videos from Courtney Howard, another one of our great friends. There's lots of videos. So we'll try and get some of those videos and make sure we share them on our Patreon, and I'll leave them open to the public so everyone can sort of consume them and watch them once we release this episode. So there'll be a little bit of time, but Katie, it was the most special 4 days of maybe my creative life. There's only a couple of days I can possibly think of that, you know, that could top those days. And they all involved me being married and having children.
And
these last 4 days have been some of the most special ever. And it culminated with this moment. And just the joy that reverberated through everyone that was around us was pretty special for us. So we're just basking in it. And that we moved people there that were our friends and familiars, as well as new friends and fans of what we do. It was really, really special.
It was so special just to see, it was a lot of people who had never met in person, but who had been either collaborating or friends online or, you know, podcast guests that we had never met who just happened to be in town or who flew in specifically for the event. Some special guest stars, surprise guest stars for Blake. The whole theme of the weekend was surprising Blake and surprising the audience. And it was really fun. But yeah, just like, you know, seeing people who you have collaborated with and have never met in person and just connecting with them, and everyone was so wonderful and brought just like the right amount of energy and the right, you know, enthusiasm and love. And I think it was just sort of like an event where everyone could kind of drop their guard and just sort of express freely how much everybody means to each other and to enjoy those friendship moments. And Blake, I just have to say, like, you are the vessel for that because you are such a positive force for good. We've often talked about how positive hot takes is like the philosophy of what we try to do. And, you know, every now and then we have a negative hot take, but we try to keep it positive. And, you know,
There's enough negativity out there. I want to talk about, I mean, the entire brand of One Heat Minute Productions and so much of your contribution too is like, let's talk about the things we love. And if there are things that we are not effusively passionate about that we don't feel like we can add to the conversation or contribute to it, like we kind of see clear, like we just sort of stay away. You know, there's some things we're just like, no, we're good. You don't need that from us. We don't want to pile on. We want to talk about how much we love Miami Vice. You know, we want to talk about how much we love Collateral. We want to talk about the things, you know, we want to talk about Ferrari and how much we love that. You know, we want to talk about Heat. We want to talk about those things we love. And I think that that's been really
special.
And
if you do it often enough, for long enough, with enough people, they let you talk to Michael Mann on stage about it. And that's crazy.
And they let you also be cheeky to Michael Mann on stage, which I had a lot of fun being cheeky and watching. Katie brings it out of me, guys. I just want to tell you this, that Katie Walsh, her smiling face and her cackle, it really inspires me occasionally to be more cheeky than I would normally be. It emboldens me, I should say.
Good.
We had a ball. You're going to hear it from us talking. We were having maybe the best time of anyone that was in that crowd. I think everyone was having a whale of a time.
That's what having a Q&A to me, not to digress too much, but like that's what having a Q&A is all about. It's like you're just the vessel for the audience to talk to this incredible artist. So if we have been a vessel for you to share your love of Michael Mann, to talk to us about how much you love Michael Mann, or to talk to anybody else or any of our amazing guests about it, that is all we're here to do. Just here to facilitate those conversations. And it was incredible to do it in person. So it was
incredible.
A time. I don't even know what else to say. It's like hard to put into words.
So we don't have to. We already put it into words. And those words you're going to hear. For so long, we never thought that Michael Mann would come on and talk Miami Vice on this show. And for so long, people have tried to program Michael Mann and Miami Vice. And it's been one he's been reticent to talk about. But ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure that Katie Walsh and I welcome you to Michael Mann on Miami Nice. Enjoy.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're all still here.
How you feeling?
Hey, Blake, what time is it?
I think it's time to be the man.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Michael Mann!
Well.
We told you to stay.
We told you to stay and you all stayed.
And to some of our dearest friends, we've been lying for about 72 hours, so we want to say apologies in advance. We've been lying to our friends. We told them we had a surprise and we would not tell them what it was. And now that's you.
Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate the reaction to this film. Thank you so much.
What has it been like sort of seeing this film get a second life 18 years after it premiered? and a whole new audience of people discovering it. A lot of people seeing it tonight for the first time. I mean,
it's obviously it's very gratifying. There was qualities to the whole prospect of making this film that I felt very very strongly about, and it probably has to do with the those passages in the film that have a certain poignance, a certain transcendent quality, which all come from the story situation. So, you know, there's parts of the film that I think every filmmaker's like this. Some, you have sections of films that you really fall in love with. You have others that you can continue to re-edit, but it's a very special, you know, it's a very, very special film to do for me. So, yeah, I'm very gratified.
What is the sequence that you fall in love with in this film?
The sequence that you fall in love with? Well, there's a number of them. Everything in Cuba, when Kroc and Isabella go to Cuba, and then when they're in Jose Yarrow's club, the whole dance sequence, basically that whole story. It stems from a real situation. What motivates me into story is usually something that happened in actuality. And there was a guy who I knew quite well, who was an undercover DEA agent working global narco-terrorism. And he fell in love. It was a happily married guy, a very conventional family in Miami. He had done a lot of work in Beirut and Marseille, and then he was on an undercover operation with money launderers in Hong Kong and fell in love with the sister of his target. And that's supposed to never happen. And then long-term deep cover, which is extraordinarily difficult, and the people who do this are quite brilliant when you meet them and talk to them and get into the details of what this relationship was. And it ended very tragically. He was eventually indicted, and when he knew he was going to go down, he went out to the interstate and walked in front of an 18-wheeler and killed himself. And that's where the idea of when the same thing happens to John Hawks when he does it. But that romantic kind of transcendent ephemeral conviction that I've met somebody, this is the love of my life, and I want nothing more than to be with them, and I'll sacrifice everything. And yes, I know I've lost the sense of which way is up, and there's no red lights, there's no green lights, there's no traffic lights. I'm just going for this. So that's very much, the heart of this thing for me.
Congratulations on the archives, the Michael Mann archives, if you don't know. Give a round of applause.
Yeah, thank you.
My favorite part of my own personal deep dive into the archives is your work with actors and these obsessive Bibles that you create for them. I wonder, because Miami Vice is not yet on the archives, do you have any stories about preparing the actors in this film? Any fun stories about working with them?
We did a lot. We had to, first of all, we waited for a number of months to shoot this in the summer, and we knew we were going to get into the hurricane season, but we thought it might be mild. It turned into the most violent hurricane season in the North Atlantic for 100 years. So while we were shooting this film, we had Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Wilma, and then some tropical storm. But while we were waiting, then we did a lot of work. And we ran a load from out in the shipping lane, 8 miles outside of Miami at night, and did everything that you see portrayed here. But we did it for real all the way through in the middle of the night. We did. Colin went. Undercover, in effect, in a way, the DEA had an undercover storefront operation where they were receiving smuggled drugs that were coming in at Miami Airport. And at one point, he took part of some of that and was receiving some of it. So if you want to really capture the intensity of what it is to do this kind of work, you, when you put yourself in a real situation, it's, number one, it's a fabulous thing to do, but it's so detailed, it's so specific, and it has so many edges to it. And so I'm a big believer in doing that kind of work with the actors, and you know, it becomes an adventure for us. But anyway, there was I'm sure there's a lot of other things that we were working on.
Your amazing collaborator Billy Goldenberg, yeah. I've been lucky enough to chat to him on our show, and you work with him from Heat, The Insider, yeah. Ali. How did your relationship develop over those years, and do you have any story about the philosophy of editing this thing? Because together in this audience, it's just
Two things. Billy began on Heat. On Heat, we had a... when I shot Heat, I was asked whether or not we could get it together for Christmas, which meant we would have had a 16-week prep, and many of us who work in the film industry here know that is insanely short. And it's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. And I said, after 6 weeks, if I think the narrative is in good shape, we'll shoot for it. And we did. So the way we did it is we had 4 editors working on the film. And we worked literally around the clock and in different shifts. And so Billy was the junior editor. It was Tom Rolfe, who was a brilliant editor, Pasquale Buba, and then my old friend Dev Honig, who had cut Thief for me and worked on Last of the Mohicans and everything, and Manhunter. And Billy, I just felt that from experience on Heat, that he had a real sense of the rhythms that I was looking for, the emotional rhythms, the particular shot, which may have an asymmetric composition, may have a lot of negative space, there's an offset figure in it, and how that worked with another shot. So we kind of had in a sensorial way, we were kind of in the same groove, and I just felt that rapport, and that's why we worked together. And Billy's just directed a film, by the way, so.
Yes, he's in London. He couldn't be here tonight. He was actually going to be here before we had you. So, yeah. This is really bizarre sitting next to you. Do you know that for us?
This guy, you have to hear this. Somebody told me, you know, if you're sitting one minute of Heat, and I said, what are you talking about, 1 minute of Heat? They said, some guy in Australia or New Zealand or someplace is putting together where they're doing an hour podcast on each minute of Heat. And I said, that's absolutely insane. You're putting me on. He said, no, it's true. You know? And he gets people on there to talk about this particular minute. And so, anyway, this is the gentleman who did this. So.
One of the fun things about watching Miami Vice now is seeing this amazing supporting cast, John Hawkes, John Ortiz, Justin Theroux, various people who were emerging at the time and now are, you know, really well-established actors and character actors. How did you, you know, what is your casting process in finding, you know, not just your stars, but your supporting actors? Like, are you watching a lot of stuff and discovering them, or how is that? What are you looking for when you cast?
Well, some just comes through casting. In the case of Ortiz, it was a casting session. I just kind of fell in love with him. I sensed the rapport right away. Barry Shabaka Henley is an old friend, and you know, I love working with him. He's fantastic. You know, he was terrific in Collateral. And then John Hawkes was in a movie called Me and You and Everybody We Know that Miranda July directed, and my daughter Erin, who is here someplace, was a production designer on it, and I said, that's when I first saw John Hawkes,
Eddie Mazin.
It was
Mazin.
A kind of a normal casting process, but Gong Li was a special case. She's fabulous, and when I first saw her in Red Sour Gum by Emu, the director, and she didn't speak really any English at the time, and she didn't even speak Cantonese. She only spoke Mandarin. And so she learned not just English, she used Mandarin phonetics to learn English, but Cuban accented English. So, so it was wild. And then we, then myself and Colin and Gong Li went to Havana.
And I want to hear some of those stories.
So you're asking about what we do. It was very, it was a very important trip because we were, we made up a biography, which I was very much, which I do with every character, for every actor. And there was a Chinese-Cuban general in Cuba. That, so there was a basis of the Chinese community in Cuba. So it was the basis of our family. But we went to Havana and met people who would have been like her parents. And I had this idea that her parents were doctors and her mother volunteered to go to Angola during that conflict. And in the during the liberation of Angola, those struggles. And we met with a number of doctors in Havana who had been in Angola, who volunteered to go to Angola. And it was a very, very moving session. And one of the things one of them said to me is there are no Angolan diamonds in the vaults in Cuba, which had to do with that idealistic kind of left perspective on National Liberation Front struggles and what was in these people's mind, you know. And so it was a very, so her, she's a brilliant, brilliant actress, and that's how her character really got grounded in that backstory.
I really want to ask, because I think this crowd enjoyed him, Eddie Marzen is amazing in this movie as Nicholas. Can you tell us anything you remember about working with Eddie? Because he was, he's just a delight in this movie.
I don't remember what, to be honest, I don't remember this, what I saw him in, but I really wanted to work with him in this, and I love the scene in the penthouse. I think Naomi Harris's delivery cracks me up every time I see it. So.
It's an incredible ensemble scene where everyone's, you know, putting in their different lines, Marlon's highlights, cleaning up the glassware, you know, everyone has a personality moment.
Right, yeah.
But also at the same time, we see Colin.
And he's also whining and complaining. And she says, because you do crime. You know?
Don't do the crime if you don't, can't do the time.
And there's a significant moment there, which for me, which I was surprised. I didn't know if it was going to work or not. But while that's happening, Crockett's looking out the window at the sea. And it's a moment that was my ambition for it was that you would sense that he's looking for something. That's all. Not what he's looking for, just that he's looking for something. The sense of a man who's introspective moment, and he's searching. That's all. And I just wanted to set that up and somehow establish, you know, that vacuum that then Gong Li or Isabella, you know, fills, and I was kind of gratified that people have asked me about that shot, and then actually, you never know if something's going to actually communicate your intent or not, and it's gratifying to find it, you know, did.
Your heroes often look at the sea. The heroes in your film, or, you know, Robert De Niro, he's staring at the sea. It's a theme you come back to, searching for something. Even Jamie Foxx in Collateral has the island postcard.
That's my own personal affliction. But I'm trying to figure something out. I try to look at the scene. So.
You mentioned this a little bit about being inspired by the story of a man who was undercover who fell in love with, you know, his target sister. But I'm curious, like, you know, what is it about an undercover story that is so compelling to you as a storyteller, and then even for us as audience members? Like,
it's a real, it's hard to put in 25 words or less.
You can have more words.
If you...
Michael, I did, it's got such 200 a high
degree,
hours.
It's such a high degree of... it's such a high degree of difficulty. There's... There, you ask for it, you're gonna at it. There's two schools. One's the American school, which is typically non-official cover, which is called a knock. That's the basic CIA approach. The Russians have a different approach where people take a completely fabricated identity. When somebody does go undercover, particularly long-term undercover, it is projecting themselves into a different personality, but usually they're exploiting tendencies within themselves and amplifying them. And there's a willful suspension of belief. It's like an actor, but there's no take two in what you're doing. There's only every take one has got to be perfect. There can't be any slip up. And when you meet a lot of these people, and I met a lot of them, and talked to them about what goes on in their life and the pathology of the after effect of being in a long-term undercover. Where the guy walks in, undercover guy from ATF walked in a place and he was challenged. And somebody pulled a gun on him, and he took the gun and pointed to his forehead and said, "You want to kill me? You know, fucking kill me right now." And put the gun on his own forehead like that. And after a tense moment like that, he goes home and walks in the house, and the wife was angry because he hadn't taken the garbage out in the morning. His brain is ready to explode. And so that's a small example of it. But Steve, the man I referred to, is a big case in point. We had a lot of these people around. There was an ex-KGB agent who had left Russia in about 1990 and was engaged when we met him in going undercover, offering nuclear artillery rounds to the FARC and other people. And it was all a setup. He was working with the DEA Special Operations Division, SOD. So and you drill down and ask them, you know, where were you living? What was the hotel? What hotel did you check into? What was your first contact? When did you feel challenged? Would you ever have any time? You know, so you get into the detail of it. It's quite fascinating. And then the genome of this is a guy is undercover. You're never supposed to get involved in any emotional way, and instead he finds the true love of his life, and it's the target he's going after. And that those circumstances, expressed, I think, beautifully by Colin and Jamie in the scene where they're preparing to go meet Jose Yarrow in that hangar. That's the essence of it, and it is the genome that creates all the story and all the dramatic situations, of the movie.
You mentioned we were chatting earlier that Jose Yarrow is a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us about how you discovered
Jose Yarrow? The character Jose Yarrow is based on a real person named Jose Yarrow. who was a drug importer in Miami during the 70s and 80s.
And you were compelled by his story or his way of doing things?
No, he calls himself Coach Loco by the primitive brutality of it. All of this comes from someplace. There was an undercover guy I know who met Amado Carrillo Fuentes, who was the head of the Juarez cartel in the 80s and 90s, who at the time of his death was, the DEA estimated, he was worth $35 billion. And he died under liposuction. He tried to change his appearance, and after 13 hours of liposuction, he had a heart attack and died. But he bought the best signal intercept equipment, the best. He bought consultants about how do I organize what I'm doing more effectively and compartmentalizations and everything else. And he was, and somebody I know met him in an undercover role briefly. And so that scene in which they meet and Crockett the first time sees Isabella, that's kind of exact staging.
Oh, really?
of how the blocking is exact staging of what was described to me. Of there was the military and the way they were organized and who searched them, and then there was four cars and one was, monitoring to make sure they weren't being surveilled and everything else. So, So this all comes from somewhere, which is kind of the exciting part of doing this.
I think we probably have time to do a couple audience questions.
Yeah, let's do a couple of audience. Would anyone like to talk to Michael Mann?
We've got a mic, so we're going to run the mic. Let's do this person right in front.
Yeah.
It's close.
Hold it. Okay. Hi, Michael. You talked about going to Cuba with Colin. There's a lot of awesome photos with him and Diego Maradona. I was wondering if you have any stories about that when you're in research.
No. Sorry.
It's a good question. It's valid. Yeah. All right, anyone else?
Right here, Courtney.
Hi, I'm just curious. I love how you write female characters in all your films, and I'm curious if you sort of tailor the parts when the actresses sign on to the role.
No, I don't. Monosyllabic one-word answers. No. Can't imagine anybody would want to do that, okay? I mean, you do it the other way. The adventure for the actor, for me, is to be somebody, you know, be somebody else. And the more difficult and challenging and interesting, the further from who the actor is, the more exciting it is for an actor. So, yeah.
Great.
Let's go. You pick, Blake.
Guy with the red hat down here, my man.
Hi. First of all, Michael, I used to live three houses down from Barry Shabaka Henley, and I would see him when I was walking my dog a lot, and he always had very nice things to say about you. But I did have a question about the opening of this movie, which I think you saw everybody really loves. How did that come to you? Was that something you had planned out, or did it happen in editing? I'm just curious how that whole thing came together.
The theatrical cut opening is not my favorite opening.
You should have heard this crowd.
This crowd agrees to disagree.
I had this wonderful boat race, which for some inexplicable reason I decided should not be there and took it off.
Wait, who decided?
I decided.
Oh.
Yeah. It makes it worse. And I much prefer the original opening, which is there on the director's cut on the Blu-ray, which, but there was always an awkwardness about when they hit the top of the dock, but there's a much better sense of it. But then, you know, I think we got the point. We're saying, no, let's just jam right into the club. So
it starts in motion, almost as if you're...
That was the idea.
Yeah. And it ends in motion. He's walking into the hospital, But, it's already happening. You're sort of dropped into the scene in a really interesting way.
How did you pick Nam Encore?
Just listening to a lot of stuff and deciding this.
That was the one. Okay. Good answer. Let's maybe go up the back. There's a very enthusiastic man. It's probably easy for you to get to up the back.
If you're asking a question about the music, Moby made a big contribution to this. And as he... As he did to Heat, and when we were in this crazy 16-week post instead of the typical about a 40-week post where we should have had, I'd come into the editing room and he'd be asleep under one of the Avids or something.
Wait, Moby?
Moby would be asleep
in under
so
the
he
Avid.
Was just around all the time, kind of composing. It was a real kind of a 16-week just,
It's like an elf or something.
Question right at the back.
Hello, Mr. Mann. Wanted to ask Mr. Mann, so at the time, like, you're one of the first, probably the first directors to photograph L.A. With the Thompson Viper like that. How much do you think the camera contributed to the look of Miami Vice at the time? Like, because if you would have done it with, like, a Mini or a Red during that time, it wouldn't have had that same look because the Viper, like, I feel like giving it that heavy grain, that type of muddied look, like, it contributed so much to that almost surrealistic, dreamlike look that the film got.
When we did the, when we did Collateral, okay, we were using the Sony F900, and then we And then we also did the Viper, because the Thompson ship and the Viper, it sounds like a cliche. It's a Dutch ship, but it has a very Rembrandt way of rendering midtones that I liked a lot. And on Miami Vice, we used Sony cameras. And it was kind of early days. They had remote recorders. And they weren't really made for the rigors of production. Normal production. We didn't do normal production. We had these cameras mounted in boats and the recorders down in the hatch with surrounded with shock absorbent materials and dry ice. I mean, it was a real drama. But the objective was to get a high saturation. The ambition was to make the film almost look like Dying Bibation or three strip Technicolor from the 1950s, which really get that intense saturation. And that had to do with both the skies, the colors in general, and then also a sense of the sense of the world, and particularly also some of the wardrobe. And that's the costume designer was Michael. Jesse, what was his last name? Michael?
Michael Kaplan.
Michael Kaplan is a fantastic designer. And my daughter Jessie is another, who also worked on the show as assistant costume designer. Yeah.
We've got one more from the crowd, and then I've got one more for Michael. Let's go right in the middle.
Hello. I had a question about the vehicles and all the set cars and set boats and planes and all of those things. When you were choosing which set cars, boats, etc. to use, was there one that you felt really contributed to the success of the scene or changed your vision for that scene?
The offshore powerboat, this one.
The Mojo.
Sorry, the one on the back.
Should be illegal because it's so much fun to drive. Driving this thing is fantastic, and then there's of course the Ferrari 430, which I spent an inordinate amount of time at the factory deciding on the colors of, and it's designed by a guy named Frank Shelton who went to California, in Pasadena, the California, what's the California?
Oh, CalArts. CalArts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a brilliant, brilliant automobile designer. And like I asked him, what was the strategy behind his design for that particular model of Ferrari? And it was to shrink wrap the skin of it around the function. It's a very, very beautiful car. Anyway, but primarily the cars are great, but the boat was something else.
Any favorite car? Did you have a favorite car in the movie?
Oh, no, lots of them. It's
All right.
Final question.
Final question.
From Mr. Blake Howard.
From me. Yeah. We were just in Ciudad del Este in this film.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, Ciudad del Este plays quite a significant part in a novel, a bestseller that you co-wrote called Heat 2, which you might understand interests me quite a bit. Okay. Could you tell us anything? And tell me, you don't have to talk to them, tell me anything about Heat 2.
This is basically I'm working on the screenplay 7 days a week, and it's large. Anyway, it's going to be at least as large as the original, which is 2 hours and 45 minutes. But it's some of the what the characters do is more, you know, has evolved beyond the novel itself, like particularly the Christian Hurley's character in the fourth part of it, the last act of it. So it's large, so. And it's going to go in. You know, we would shoot in Paraguay in Ciudad del Este, where we shot for a number of days in this picture, and which is a very wild place, and then also in Mexicali and in Chicago and L.A. and then in Southeast Asia, probably Batam, which is right across from Singapore, right across the Strait of Malacca from Singapore.
We can't wait.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Mann.
Thank you.
Thank you guys all for being here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.